Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revolution of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, A Time to Kill. We know that there are laws that govern the use of deadly force. With those laws in mind or not, What would you do if your life was imminently threatened? Given particular circumstances, would you use deadly force? To kill means to cause the death of someone. Murder, the unlawful, premeditated killing of a human being. So, murder is to take a life or kill unjustly. Kill is to cause the termination of a life. Does the thought of killing justly impact on how you feel about killing? Does preserving your life take precedence over legal and or moral ideologies and laws? Our thinking and feelings are formed by our life experiences, information imparted to us through our senses, socialization, through our parents, families, peers, community, culture, religious, spiritual, educational institutions, media, etc. The effect of our exposure to violence and trauma may vary from individual to individual. Some may choose to fight, and others may choose to take flight. Some may have compassion, and others a moral conviction. Who are you in this life-threatening scenario? Here's a scenario. Imagine you are lying in bed at night. You have a loaded pistol somewhere within your reach. You're awakened, and there is a man coming in your bedroom carrying a 12-inch butcher knife. What do you do? Why? If he is unarmed, why? What if it's a woman? What do you do and why? So, from the Washington Times, just a little background information on people's beliefs. In 2010, 1/3 of the 84% of the world's population has a faith. 1/3 of them are Christian. The largest population is in the U.S. The world's third largest religious group after Christianity is Muslims. Judaism make up less than 1% of those of the 84% of the faithful. I'm saying that because I'm going to get some information from the Bible and the Quran. Just a little bit. It's not a church. Cold Case Christianity with J. Warner Wallace from the Bible. The command from the scripture in the original language actually says, "You shall not murder." Exodus 20:13. The Hebrew word for murder literally means the intentional, premeditated killing of another person with malice. Sounds like the legal definition of the word murder. The Quran, whoever kills a person unjustly, it is as though he has killed all mankind. And whoever saves a life, it is as though he has saved all mankind. Quran 5:32. Pennsylvania law justified. Does Pennsylvania law allow for use of force in self-defense? Personal protection is generally accepted as the number one reason why Americans own guns. If you own a gun for personal protection, it follows that you are prepared and willing to use your firearm to defend your own life. That's pretty straightforward right there. However, the first thing you must understand in self-defense is justification defense. When claiming self-defense, you are saying that you definitely did it. It was not an accident. You did what you did intentionally and knowingly. However, you did what you did to defend yourself. It is the classic me, you, or me, or you moment. That's imminent threat. Pennsylvania courts have long recognized the use of force in self-defense, including deadly force. A killing committed to protect one's life or limb, or to save oneself from great bodily harm, or under circumstances reasonably given rise to fear of such injuries unless one kills his assailant is justifiable. That's from the Commonwealth versus Capella, 322 PA 200, 1936. Justification has just been codified as an affirmative defense in Title 18. An affirmative defense means that you, as the accused, through your attorney, have to claim it. Once you do, so in Pennsylvania, then it becomes the government's burden to overcome your claim of self-defense with evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. So I'm going to say that one more time. I hope nobody ends up in this situation. But an affirmative defense means that you, as the accused, through your attorney, have to claim it. Once you do, in Pennsylvania, then it becomes the government's burden to overcome your claim of self-defense with evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. As justification in an affirmative defense, in order for a defendant to be convicted of a crime, the prosecutor must prove every single element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt is a very high standard to meet because the finder of fact, usually a jury, must find that no reasonable person could draw any other conclusion as to each element of the crime. Even if this standard is satisfied, the accused may raise an affirmative defense. Still, the accused does not have the burden to prove a self-defense claim, says the Commonwealth versus Smith in 2014, PA Superior Court 165, citing Commonwealth versus Torres. What's that? That's in 2001. Rather, there must simply be some evidence from whatever source to justify a finding of self-defense. If raised properly, the prosecutor will then have the burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's actions were still not justifiable under the laws of self-defense. That's deep right there. So, for my listening audience, you can call in anytime you like. What say you? You are in your bedroom, sleeping, falling asleep, staring at the ceiling, whatever you do in your bedroom. You have a loaded weapon within your reach. A man walks into, we have a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thoughts.
I hit the button by mistake. I was still listening.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right.
All right.
I think, all right. Oh, we have a caller. 00036. Welcome to Provocative Thoughts.
Hello, good evening.
Yeah.
This is Q.
Q, what's up, Q?
I think not much. I think in all three of those scenarios you have the right to defend yourself. Typically the way they make these claims nowadays about these police officers feeling threatened and everything like that, I think it's very easy to say that you felt threatened if you lay in asleep in your bed or something like that, or, laying in your bed and someone comes in there. Yeah. I think that's open to shut.
Well, you have to prove that it's justified. Justified means that it's no premeditation. You can't shoot your wife walking in the room. Say the wife can be walking in the room from the kitchen with a knife in her hand. You gonna shoot her? Or your husband? You know what I'm saying? Or your brother coming? Right.
I know my spouse.
Saying.
But your scenario, you said it was some guy, and then with a strange lady.
Right.
Yeah, I think they can be shot. Yeah, I
you
think
would,
some guy.
What would you do?
Shot.
You would shot him? Would you shoot him?
Yeah, the guy walking in with the butcher knife. Yeah, he'd be shot.
Yeah, he walking in. He shot.
Yeah.
He shot. We're dead. Shot in the leg. What? Warning shot.
I don't know how to shoot at the leg. I only know center mass.
Center mass. Okay, center mass. That's a kill shot. That's a lethal shot, at least as a highest level of lethality. Center mass. Okay, so
did you say she had a butcher knife too?
No, she has a loaded pistol. The woman, whoever is in it, you have a pistol. Whoever's walking in.
Right.
But if it's a woman, what if a woman walked in with a butcher knife? Did you shoot her?
Yes.
It's not your woman. It's just a woman. Just showed up in your house, butcher knife.
Right. That's what I'm assuming you're saying. But yes.
All right. She shot too? Sent a mask?
Sent a mask.
Sent a mask? The woman?
Sent a mask.
Okay. And the reason being that it's less dangerous, or what would be a thinking on that? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, disaster.
I'm saying a strange person walking into my bedroom is a threat. A strange person walking my bedroom cause injury or death. That person
has
intent to harm me, to kill me.
Right. So what if that person is unarmed? Now you have a loaded gun. That person is unarmed.
I try to keep them at bay with my loaded weapon, but I don't know. They could still end up getting shot, depending on how aggressive they are.
Okay. So you would give them a warning by threatening with the loaded weapon, not firing it.
It's a gunfight. If any time two people get into a confrontation and it turns physical, if somebody has a gun, that's a gunfight. One person may not know it or not, but the person that has the gun, that bought the gun, they know it's a gunfight.
Right.
And they got to make sure that person doesn't get that weapon to use on, they'll take their weapon and use it on them. So it becomes a gunfight.
Hmm. That sounds like what Zimmerman said about Trayvon Martin. He tried to reach my gun. He tried to grab my gun, so I shot him.
Right. But in my case, I was laying down in my bed. This person attacked me. Yeah.
Right. So you were supposed to be at.
I wasn't stalking.
Trayvon Martin is where he was supposed to be at. Right.
Huh?
That's right. You're not the stalker. That's right. All right, got you.
Yeah, I'm not stalking anybody with my weapon. Anticipating the gunfight.
Right. Okay, so you're saying within, you have a gun, and someone gets within a close proximity to you, that's anybody's gun, right?
Right.
It could be anybody's gun.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. That's because if you're not eliminating the threat, then there's a chance that the threat could eliminate you with your superior weapon.
Right, my own weapon.
John, that's true. Okay. So is that an argument for police getting in tussles and shooting people?
I guess it could be, but in most of the cases I remember hearing, the physical part was already over. There was no physical activity going on at the time of the shooting, the actual shooting, that the person was, a distance away. Non-threatening and, and that they were a distance away where no one was threatened. That's the way most of those cases have, the big cases that I remember hearing about.
Right. Okay. So would you be able to, would you sleep pretty well after the guy came in with the butcher knife and, you hear him sending mass and he checks out. Does that help you sleep? That the fact that you feel comfortable with that?
Say that again.
He had a butcher knife. The fact that this guy had a butcher knife coming into your bedroom. Did you feel comfortable with your reaction to that?
Extremely. Extremely comfortable with that.
Okay. We have anybody that's calling in, please press number one if you want to speak. This show is about what you think. Okay, so sounds like you are that is covered under the affirmative defense clause here. You know what I'm saying? You have a, you know, it'd be hard to prove that. It'd be hard to prove that you're acting in maliciously, and or premeditation is out the window because they're coming into your bedroom. So there's no premeditation there, and there's a, you know, there is a threat, an imminent threat. So
right. I would say
he's
so,
coming
but,
in, right? At that, yeah.
But also at the same time, being African American, and depending on what jewelry they get, I think they can probably get those people to go any way they want them to go. So I don't think that's guaranteed.
You're right. Well, according to what I'm reading, in terms of in Pennsylvania anyway, well, you shouldn't say anything to anybody except your attorney. And you got to get the right attorney that knows how to present, you know, your case, you know. Not to say that they get you off of being a murderer, but if you have to kill someone in self-defense, you might present it the wrong way in questioning, and that could get you some time right there. You understand what I'm saying?
No, what do you mean?
According to what I've been reading, you need to get an attorney to present your case to the law.
Okay.
Because what you say from the time after that act has been committed could cost you to do some time if you present it the wrong way to the police officers asking questions. Present it the wrong way, you could be you say the wrong thing. You could say, you know, sometimes we say things it means something else. But if you say the wrong thing in that scenario, you could be going to jail. Because you can turn around and say something different later on, but it's too late. Because they're going to, you know, now, you know, which one do you mean? Now you got people saying you can't trust what this guy's saying, you know. So they're saying, make sure you get lawyered up before you even start having a conversation with the police.
Right. That makes sense.
Right. Because yeah, you have to, it's a way you present that. So it's basically it's saying it's justified when the actor believes that such a force is immediately necessary for the purpose of protecting himself against the use of unlawful force by such other person on the present occasion. So the question here is a guy walking into your bedroom, does that represent an imminent threat? Or is it just a threat because he hadn't just came at you, directly at you? Depends on how your bed is situated. He's coming directly at you. Most bedrooms I know, somebody walking in, they coming directly at you. I don't know if anybody has a bedroom big enough that he's not coming directly at a person is in there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't have that kind of money to have that size bedroom. So, but, you know, what if the person is not coming directly at you, going towards the window? Feel about, you know, is he an imminent threat to me if he's in your house with a butcher knife? You know,
right.
What are you going to do? You're going to wait till this guy, you know, would you tell him to stop? Would you tell him stop before you shot him, you know, anything like that? Would you say anything? Oh, stop, get out, drop, you know what I'm saying? Drop the knife, anything
right.
like that? Or is it just, well, you know, hey, guy with a knife. If you're just waking up out of and you see a guy with a knife, that's a good chance that he's just going to get shot. Would you say
I
that?
I agree with that.
Yeah, he's just not supposed to be there. And definitely not with a knife. You're not going to, that's a situation where you're only going to see, especially waking up. I had presented that question to some people, other people, and some people thought it was the answer to the question saying that they would shoot the guy in the leg. And of course, you know, you got to wonder, are you that good of a shot that you could shoot a guy in your bedroom, right, in the leg? And then if you happen to hit him in his leg, do you know if that's going to stop him? You know what I'm saying? So, but it seems to me that there are people who don't have that kind of a response to an imminent threat, that they feel like, you know, they don't want to take a life. And that doesn't mean you want to take a life. You know what I'm saying? But they feel so strong about taking a life that in a scenario, because we don't know what they would do if they're actually in a scenario. But they said that they would not. The first thing that they did would not be use deadly force, even though people probably don't know. But if you fire your weapon, you are using deadly force anywhere. You shoot him in the leg, he's still using deadly force. So leg or center mass is still, and by law, the use of deadly force. But in terms of killing, they wouldn't try to kill the intruder. And I thought that was interesting, because as we know, you can shoot somebody in the leg, and if they're in your bedroom, and as I just said, we don't have 20 feet bedrooms, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody come in your bedroom, 9 times out of 10, they right on top of you. Is that right?
I agree.
They're like about two steps from touching you. So, I mean, to shoot them in the leg or at the leg, because, you know, some people think that it's an easy thing to just fire and hit somebody. It's not always that easy. And if you're close enough to absolutely hit him in the leg with your gun, then he's close enough to run that butcher knife through you.
That is so absolutely right.
And so,
yeah.
I mean,
I think the majority of those people that are doing that, I think they would most likely be dead. Or seriously wounded, because like you said, the person is right there, and it's dark, and trying to hit moving legs is much, you know, it's harder to hit legs, moving legs in the dark than it is to hit center mass.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. You know, people like from the inner city, I think most of them would shoot, as you say, center mass. And not shooting at any legs or anything like that. They would get rid of the threat. You know. Personally, I think that's pretty risky to shoot at somebody's legs if they're coming in your bedroom with a butcher knife, because that's not like a strange man coming in your bedroom with a bottle. You know what I'm saying? That's a guy with a butcher knife. You know, it's just those two things are different. Even though both of them could be just as deadly or dangerous or present as much of a threat as the other in the final outcome of them coming into your bedroom. The one with the knife is, you know, it's a more heightened threat. Even though a guy with the bottle, he can lunge you over the head with the bottle, break it, cut you up and stuff like that, knock you unconscious, and then who knows what happens, you know. So, you know, I asked a couple of females, you know, they basically, some of them said they wouldn't shoot them, they wouldn't kill them. And I said, well, you run the high risk of being raped, beaten, robbed, murdered, or all of those. We have a caller on 9331. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, I hear you. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we do. We hear you.
How you doing? My name is Shine. And
this
is one of the comments on your topic tonight. And I just wanted to say, first of all, you got somebody in your house that you did not invite. And I wouldn't be thinking about if I'm going to kill him, but I'm thinking about is he going to try to kill me. So I'm doing whatever it takes to get this man out my house and for him not to be a threat to me. And something goes wrong where I had to take his life, it's either me or him. That's all I wanted to say.
So you say self-preservation takes precedence over legal or moral codes.
Yes.
You're not even worrying about legal or moral codes. You're worrying about self-preservation. That comes first.
I'm worried about protecting myself and my family that's in my house,
right,
and anybody else that's anywhere I am and somebody's trying to hurt them.
Oh,
I mean,
you know what? That's interesting, too. That's understandable. You know, that's what we do. We protect our families. And you don't know what he's done before he got to your room, right? If you got family.
Yep.
Right?
Yep,
you don't even know if
he's
been in your kid's room.
That night, I'm going to rob his house. He
right.
robbed somebody. You're right. He robbed somebody else, and he on the mound. Hold on.
Right.
I'm going to do whatever I have to do to protect me and my family.
Okay. So what if it was a woman?
I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect me and my family, man, woman, child, whoever.
Okay. What if the person was unarmed?
But they're going to get the beat down of their life with my sis. And I'm going to try to hold them down until the police get it there.
What if it's a 250-pound man? Remember, the scenario is that you are in your bed and you have a loaded pistol within your reach.
Reach for the pistol immediately, unless this person was on top of me trying to kill me.
Well, your pistol was within your reach and the person is two steps away from you. As the previous caller said, what do you think is going to happen? Or could happen?
My pistol's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Well, your pistol could become their pistol, male or female.
Right.
Right. Because I know if I'm breaking into somebody's house, which I'm not, and I walk into the bedroom and I see a pistol on a nightstand, I'm getting that pistol because of what you just said. Hello?
I'm still here.
Oh, yeah, so I'm going to grab your gun, and your gun going to become my weapon. As the previous caller said, whenever there are two people and one has a gun in proximity, that's a gunfight. Well, it's at least a potential gunfight.
That sounds about right. But
shoot to kill, you're saying. Person coming in on under those conditions, shoot to kill. Ask questions later. Is that right?
Yeah, that person ain't asked you if they could come in your house.
No conversation, like stop, halt, drop the knife. Nothing?
Get out of my house.
Oh, would you say anything? I'm just saying. What do you
think
you do?
I
mean, I
think when people do break into your house, they not coming in to talk to nobody, or they coming in to hurt you. So if they wanted a conversation or they wanted me to ask them something or what they doing, they would have rung my doorbell.
That's
you in my
interesting
house.
Point.
You in my house without my permission, so therefore.
Why are you talking to him? Is that what you're saying? Yep. Why am I holding a conversation with a potential somebody that's really not here to talk to me?
Yep. But
that's
all I wanted
here.
To say. That's all I wanted to say. Enjoy listening.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Good evening.
You welcome.
All right, you too.
Bye bye.
Okay, thank you. All right, just want to remind the callers. Don't forget to press the number one. You want to add to tonight's scenario. Remember, the scenario is you are in your bed, sleeping, resting, whatever. And a man walks in with a 12-inch butcher knife. You have a loaded weapon, pistol, within your reach. What do you do? Do you shoot, kill, ask the intruder to leave by pointing the gun at him? What do you do? Do you wound him? Do you kill him? What do you do? How do you feel about that? And we have some more information. What caliber you use? Common misconception. What caliber you use matters. Nope. Doesn't matter. We either said that you can have a 22 or a 357 Magnum. Law does not require you to use the lowest caliber firearm available to you in a given situation. Type of firearm used matters. Nope. Number of shots used matters. The moment you reload your weapon, you can no longer claim self-defense. All right? You got a gun that shoots twice, you can't claim self-defense. Point of fact, it does not. The law does not require you to use only one projectile. As anyone who has had any tactical or self-defense training will tell you, you shoot to end the threat. The fact is, even those who are highly trained and drilled will require more than one shot to end the threat. Shooting to end the threat does not mean murder. It means shooting to stop the perpetrator from continuing to complete one of the four specified acts allowed under Pennsylvania law, meaning death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force or threat. So if you are shooting someone and they die, and you're trying to defend yourself against those acts, those four acts, death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force, the law allows you to do that. So the modifications to a firearm use matters. Does not. The type of load used in the gun matters. Does not. Hollow points. I thought hollow points were illegal. So whether you have a concealed carry permit matters. Point of fact, it does not. A Pennsylvania license to carry a firearm does not eliminate your ability to claim self-defense or mean that you have an extra right to defend yourself. It matters if you have received advanced tactical training. Nope. So the harm must be imminent. That's the word, the key word here, you guys. Imminent threat. Harm is imminent when it is about to happen. It's about to go down. So that's when you're probably going to be considered justified. So here are some scenarios that I picked up. Chris tells Larry, I'm going to shoot you first thing tomorrow. Can Larry deploy lethal self-defense now to defend himself immediately after those words? Do Chris' words place Larry in fear of death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force or threat? Yes. Not the sexual part, you know. Yeah, no, just death, fear of death. One of them. Or does his words place it in one of these categories? Yes. Is there an imminent threat? No, it's not imminent. God doesn't even have a gun, and he's not even behaving in a manner which he wants to carry out the threat. He's just running his mouth. So, no, Larry cannot legally deploy self-defense. Now, to defend himself right now, after those words, what Larry should do is monitor Chris, get safety away from Chris, consider making a police report. Be prepared. Scenario 2. Chris is in a parking lot outside his truck and comes across Larry. Chris confronts Larry. Chris threatens to go back into his truck, get his gun in the glove box, and shoot Larry when he gets back. Can Larry deploy lethal self-defense now to defend himself immediately after those words? And we know in some scenarios, that's a death sentence on the street. So, but let's see. Do Chris' words place Larry in fear of death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse? Compelled by a force or threat? Yes. Fear of death, right? Is it imminent? No. Because it's not imminent means it's ongoing. It's happening now. Scenario 3. Chris has a pistol in his hip, open carry style. That's like the cowboy kind of thing. Chris has his arm folded across his chest. Chris says to Larry, I've got a gun and I'm going to shoot you. Can Larry deploy lethal self-defense now to defend himself after those words? Does Chris' words place Larry in fear of death? Yes. Serious body injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force? Of course not. Those other two, right? But he's definitely in fear of... No, he's not talking about raping him or kidnapping him.
Oh, right. That wasn't what he said. Right.
Okay. Right. It's one of these things. These are the four categories. So it says four categories. Fear of death, serious body injury, which it does represent. Right? If you don't die, you're going to have a serious injury. But the other two, kidnapping, no, and sexual intercourse, no. So it's not an imminent threat. So no, Larry cannot legally deploy legal self-defense now to defend himself. What he should do is, again, get away from this guy, make a police report, and be prepared. Number 4, same fact as scenario 2, but other words. Chris makes a movement to his hip. He threatened to kill him, right? Has a gun on him. Makes a movement towards his hip, towards his gun, and starts to engage his gun towards Larry. Can Larry deploy lethal self-defense now to defend himself? Do Chris' words place Larry in fear of death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping, or sexual intercourse compelled by force or threat? Yes. We know at least two of those things, fear of death or serious bodily injury. Is it an imminent threat? Yes.
Yeah.
It is reasonable to believe that Chris intends to imminently, is about to shoot and cause the death or serious bodily injury to Larry. So there's a scenario. There's a difference, you know, because I know a lot of people, some people, not a lot of people, but I don't know anybody, will shoot you on a threat, a verbal threat. And there are some people who, when they threaten you verbally, it's you can bet your paycheck that they're going to attempt to do what they say they're going to do. So I know that kind of thing happens, and then, you know, people act on that. Chris mistakenly believes that Larry insulted him. Chris comes up to Larry and punches him in the gut, knocking Larry's wind out. Chris walks away from Larry. Can Larry deploy lethal self-defense to defend himself? Does Chris' word place Larry in fear of death, serious bodily injury, kidnapping? Huh? No. He got hit in the gut. Is there an imminent threat? No. Just got hit in the gut. He got a gut check. So, no, Larry cannot use lethal force. We know that there are people who will. If you put your hands on them like that and they have a weapon on them, you're going to get shot. You know anybody like that, Q? You ever know about those scenarios? You hit a man with a gun, you get shot.
Yes.
Okay. As you can see, with the five scenarios, there are just so many factors that come into play. For instance, Chris is 6'5 and 255 pounds of muscle, and Larry is 82 years old and very obviously frail. It might affect the calculus. What about being surrounded by a crowd of people who you believe that might mob attack you and send you to the hospital or the morgue? It all depends. See, man, if you change the age of Larry, check him in the gut, a 6'5", 200-pound, 25-pound man hitting an 82-year-old man in the gut, that could cause serious bodily injury and or death, right? Because he's 82 years old. He's fragile, right?
Right.
Okay, can an accident ever be lawful or act in self-defense? Legal principles aside, it may be possible for one to intentionally kill someone in self-defense, but still consider the entire ordeal an accident. So there was a story where self-defense, a legal of a guy who shot a guy who was pretending to be a bad guy on Halloween night, and he shot him on purpose. He busted his house with a gun in his hand, I don't know, it was a BB gun or whatever, something. It wasn't a real gun. And the guy shot him. So that's where the guy was killed in that circumstance. That's kind of crazy thing to do, break somebody's door down because you think it's Halloween. It's not even Halloween. Not that that's an excuse. Even on Halloween, you shouldn't be kicking anybody's door down, coming in like you brandishing a gun. That will get you killed. So in terms of murdering people, does the Bible or the Quran even sanction that? So let's look at, you know, because we might feel so strong about our religious or spiritual conviction that we want to murder anybody. And they say an accidental killing is not a murder. Exodus 21:12-13. Anyone who strikes a man and kills him shall surely be put to death. However, if he does not do it intentionally, but God lets it happen, he is to flee to a place I will designate. Numbers 35:22-25 says, but if without hostility someone suddenly shoves another or throws something at him unintentionally or without seeing him, drops a stone on him that could kill him and he dies, then since he was not his enemy, and he did not intend to harm him. See, these guys are, the assembly must protect the one accused of murder from the avenger of blood. A killing performed in self-defense or in defense of one's home is not murder. Exodus 22:2. If a thief is caught breaking in and is struck so that he dies, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. That's close to the scenario I read. About the guy coming to your house. He's a trespasser, and he's an imminent threat. A killing performed in an attempt to save a life of an innocent person is not murder. So just saying this because, like I just said in the beginning, that one-third of the 84% of the people who believe, have a faith, are about one-third are Christian. And, you know, I was wondering if this, I doubt that serious anybody even have time to think about which part of the Bible they may want to remember or recite or anything like that. But the belief and, you know, the commandment, thou shalt not kill, does that make people want to shoot for the legs instead of terminating an intruder coming in the house? What do you think about that, Q?
Say that again. Say that again.
So I wonder if a person's belief, their spiritual or moral or religious belief in doubt, like thou shalt not kill, would that impact on their decision to kill a person that was coming in their house, like in that scenario, even with a knife or not?
You know, I'm sure it does, but I mean, you have you don't have much time to really think about all of that if you're trying to live.
Right. Right.
You know. But
right.
An actual
event.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm sure some people do get killed for, you know, because of that. I was listening to this one movie. It's fiction, everything like that, but it had a very interesting point. It was this mass murderer there, and he had the hero tied up. But before he tied the hero up, the way he got him was he offered him something. And even though the hero suspected something could go wrong, it seemed like he didn't want to be insulting to this murderer. So he kind of like, you know, he consented to stay and maybe have a drink or something like that, which was really bad for him because I think the guy drugged him or something like that. But he was anticipating on the guy not wanting to insult him and accepting his drink or whatever it was, you know?
Okay. Yeah, another.
And I think that religious thing kind of plays into that same thing, too. And
right.
If you're going to
make
these other decisions that are not to your benefit, you know, because of your beliefs or something like that, you know, because your religion, because you don't want to insult someone, something like that. And it's going to get you killed.
Right. We have a caller, 999. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, what's up, Carlton? It's Carol. I just wanted to go back on that little. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yeah.
On the religious, I don't know if you want to say religious, but I know from the Bible standpoint where they were. Can you hear me? Oh, okay.
Yes, we can.
All right. When they had accidental death, they had those cities of refuge. I can't remember. It was like maybe like a total of 6 cities. But the way it was taught to us was because back then they believed in eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, that kind of stuff like that. The individual who accidentally killed somebody, you know, as he was fleeing to the city of refuge, his family members had a right to kill him, okay? The thing was that he had to make it to the city. So once he made it to the city, there would be a priest that was in that city, and then he was to remain in that city until the death of that priest. So once that priest died, then he would be able to leave that city and there would be no judgment against him. But if he killed, if somebody, even in that accidental death, killed somebody, the people's family still could kill him as he was en route to the city of refuge. Okay, so you're not off scot-free. I don't even know if you could say absolved, exempted from the accidental death, but they would reside in the city of the priest of that city of refuge until the priest's death. After the priest died, then that person was free to leave that city without any retribution from the family members. But he could be killed en route. Okay, that's the way it was taught. The city is the place of refuge, not getting there, you know, but as you go, they caught up with you, your goose could be cooked. All right, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, thank you. Well, that's interesting. So it sounds like the Bible condones killing at some point. We have Exodus 23:7. Have nothing to do with false charge, and do not put an innocent or honest person to death, for I will not acquit the guilty. Romans 13:4. For the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servant, agents, and wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. So the rulers are God's servants. When they murder, they are acting as an agent of God. Are they guilty of murder? It says, or Romans 13:9 says, you shall not murder. Let me see. There's just so many verses in the Bible that deal with murder. Basically saying that you should not murder. We have like 3 more minutes to go. So then we have the Deuteronomy chapter 7. And you shall destroy all the people that the Lord your God will give over to you. Your eyes shall not pity them, neither shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. But in the cities of these people that the Lord your God gives you for inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes, and kill everything. So utterly destroy them, the Hittites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And 1 Samuel 15:3. Now go attack Amalek and proscribe all that belongs to him. Spare no one, but kill alike men and women, infants and sucklings, oxen and sheep, camels and asses. So, from the alislam.org, and whoever kills a believer intentionally, his punishment is hell. He shall abide in it, and Allah will send his wrath on him and curse him and prepare for him a painful chastisement. Okay? So we have some scriptures that differentiate between killing and murdering. And I want to thank everybody for calling in. You guys are listening in. I want you to stay tuned. Stay tuned for next week. Q. Thank you for holding on.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
I'm hanging up.
Okay. You will not be able turn on, and cop out.
Kenny Jones.
You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during
everybody again
because
for
the revolution will not be
next
televised.
Week.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Don't say that. Does the Word of God don't say me. Slavers are held that the Bible condones. Amen. A minute. Point out particularly. Slaves obey your master. And believers not only to please them while they are watching, but as servants of Christ. Oh, God. I did not hit nothing like that. What's that in? Sounds like New Testament. Not bad. Look at this. on your child so that he or she doesn't starve? All right, let me get one thing. Kitten. Let's see what's going on here. There's some crazy. Yeah, sex with another man's slave. Like, yo, what the fuck, man? You supposed to have no goddamn slave at all. Oh my god. It's coming out like, I don't know what I do with it. It's all active. That's what I know it's about this shit. Get one thing straight. I'm being a slave. Enough of the dumbass talk about what's not as bad as slavery here. So, once somebody puts you in slavery, the kind they talk about in the Bible, is that what we're saying? Once that thing gets on a pattern, nope. Only do the enemy. Sell your daughter. What kind of. Somebody even think that's okay, man. Some problem. That's a lot of talk about from slavery. Sounds like female slave gave to another man. still a slave. What the fuck are you saying? Come on now, it's not rocket science. Father, thing about the Bible.